Today is December 20th, 2015, and Steve, do me a favor, close the door so we don't... You hear me? Close the door. I hear people out there making noise. And I want to say hello to my students in front of me after our lapse for Hanukkah, and hello to all those listening across the wide expanse of Jewish settlement throughout the world, and I'll deal with what I just said 1 second ago tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem. Now, today's shiur is very interesting. On one hand, we'll see, and this is what I keep on saying about Rav Menashe Klein. He's raised in a certain environment, and you'll see there's a certain closed-mindedness. On the other hand, there certainly is a large open-mindedness, as we will see later today. Well, we are finishing out that topic of Kol Isha. It's a topic that in modern times we have to deal with it. In Israel, it's been headlines time and again, and it's an ongoing problem. The army has to attract Haredim. We need Haredim. They're taking over the country here statistically. The next Attorney General, if I read the news correctly, is a semi-Haredi individual, sends his kids to a school in Bnei Brak. It's not a Tzioni Dati school, from what I understand. And he wears a big yarmulke, kippah, that identifies him as being in the Haredi or the semi-Haredi world. And he's a former major general in the IDF, who now will be the Attorney General in the State of Israel. So the army wants Haredim. On the other hand, all right, you have women singing, the army, the choirs, the general choirs. 1 second. The general choirs, not the rabbinic choir. I know the rabbinic choir and yours truly used to do an entertainment show. I don't think we were as good as Jerry Seinfeld, but my job was to give Divrei Torah, and their job was to entertain. I lived in Israel too long. I like the Israeli pickles better than the American pickles. You understand? The Yavna pickles in vinegar or in salt, to me, are better than anything you get in America. But 50 years ago, it wasn't that way. But Baruch Hashem. Anyway, I Jerry Seinfeld, I wish I could bring him to a class here. I taught his first cousins, and I know his background, and I always have confidence that a Talmud of the Rav, which I'm zeichet to be, if he heard a few classes here, he might recognize his heritage and where the future has to be, and it would be a little bit different. But what can I do? Natan didn't go with the Yomo and kidnap him and bring him here to class today. Now, coming back here, one second. So, this problem is real. The Israeli army, you can have women singing, and this is an ongoing problem. It's not going to go away, and we have to deal with it. We've dealt with it in great depth, but I want to finish out this last tshuva. I'm in Chelik Yud Bet Siman Resh Tzadihei. Yes, Moshe.
How does the secular Zionist movement deal with all of these religious people attaining such high levels?
What, you don't read Haaretz? They're going crazy. Read Haaretz. You have to know what's going on. And if you saw your diyud over the weekend, then your very article, they have a debate. I believe I saw it in your diyud, unless I saw it. What else have I looked at from the weekend newspapers? Unless I saw it in B'sheva. But they have a debate between a religious Zionist and a leftist from Tel Aviv, and you should see that debate, what's going on. And the religious Zionist says, you have no influence anymore, you guys are gone, you can bring a few thousand people to demonstrate, that's all you can do. You have no voting power, you have to get used to the idea. And the news today, you have to make a Shechiyanu, that the government will be able to tell a city municipality you cannot open on Shabbos. That's the news today. That's very, very big and important if you've been to Tel Aviv lately. Okay, but Yerushalayim is terrible. In your area, a taker is terrible. Walking home Friday night, I said to Malta, we could have been in North Tel Aviv. The cabs are all there, right under your nose, yelling Tel Aviv. And I'm wondering why they're running to Tel Aviv. Is it warmer there? No, the bars are open all night, etc. But okay.
You didn't go down on the mountain.
No, I understand. Right, you got to walk through them. Why do you come late then, Yitzchak? I just spoke about you, and you're late. What can I do? You guys, 15 minutes earlier, get here and relax. Let's roll. I have a gift for Michael and Yitzchak after class. You'll see. It's a personalized. You don't know the person involved, thank God. They do. So you'll understand after class. Okay.
It must be baseball or Yitzchak. It must be Torah.
No. It's neither baseball or Torah. It's artwork. We'll get there. Okay. My dear students, we ended off last week and you heard my introduction. And we ended off, we're in the middle of a tshuva, about a women's school in a frum neighborhood. It's probably in Brooklyn. And the girls are singing. When I walk out of this school Friday morning, when I walk out of this campus, so right up the block is a Mamlachti Dati school with loudspeakers, and you hear them singing Shirei Shabbat. It's beautiful. All right, so this school, it's all girls. The girls are singing. The classes are happy. And Choshev Rav writes to Reb Menashe Klein, do you have to protest? What can you do about this? And Reb Menashe Klein writes back, and we ended off the class last week. It's the famous Psak of the Rambam. It's based upon the Gemara and Baba Batra. By the way, you can find any time you quote the Rav taught us, this is before the computer world, but Rebbe didn't have the type of memory that Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein had. Rabbi Aaron knew Shas basically by heart. He knew every page, what's on every Amud in Shas. The Rav knew sugyas, but he would say to Rabbi Aaron, Avu State, where is it? What Gemara am I looking for? You know, the new lesson, the sugyan Bab. But the Rav taught us one time in a moment after class when we were kibitzing around and we said to Rebbe, so how do we find the Gemara? What's the secret? We know it's a Gemara. We know Chazal said. So he gave me the secret that I've used ever since. I'm not computer conscious on this level. And it's very simple. You can find any halacha through the Rambam. Because if you heard Rakefet's lectures about 40 years ago in this kollel, or close to 40 years ago, I think 38 years ago, I gave on the different type of Sifrei Psak. What's unique about the Rambam, he follows a logical order. He is more organized than the Riv, the Rush, and all you have to do is look up the halacha you're interested in. He did Hilchata the Meshichata and Hilchata Bizman Hazeh. And when you look up the halacha you're interested in, you look at the Nosei Kalim, and in a minute you look into the Kesef Mishnah, you find the source for the Gemara that the Rambam is talking about. So it's a way to get at all of Shas. So the Rambam, Hilchatara Torah, Perik Bet, Halacha Zayin, and this is what we ended off last week. Echad b'bnei mavui shemavakesh la'asod lehe'asot melamed afilu echad b'bnei ha'chatzea ein yecholin shcheinov limchot b'yado. That if someone in a closed community, we probably cul-de-sac, but a closed community, even if it's your next door neighbor, even if it's the apartment under you in a co-op building in Israel, and he wants to become a melamed and have children come, you cannot stop him. This is a special halacha. If my next door neighbor opens up a tannery with a terrible smell, I can go to Beit Din and I can stop him. He has to be beyond city limits there. There are all types of rules in Baba Batra. But Malamed ein yachol limchot biyado. Shenema Hashem chafeks leman sidko yagdil Torah v'ya'adiyah. And this, I don't have to elaborate. This is the basis of Yiddishkeit, teaching the children. If we don't teach the children, we have no future. The most important concept in davening is in Volet Zion, Shelo Yigal Reik, and Lebahala, that our refuge shouldn't be in vain. Now, what does it mean our refuge shouldn't be in vain? If children don't continue the traditions, Judaism, Torah will disappear. And this was the motto of the young Israel when I was growing up. Will our children be ours? Do you remember that, Michael? It was very powerful, and the Chatam Sofer boasted. on his deathbed, he named Mitatosh Shlomo, and he said, "My Mita, the children I produced, all my descendants, Shalem, Tkulam Shomrei Torah Umitzvot." And this is the greatest achievement the human being can have. Unfortunately, in our times, it's not always true. The finest Gedolei Yisrael gonna have one or two problems. Psychologists have a field day over this. The Aguda Convention just discussed the topic. It comes up in the Rebbe's letters. If you're a Chabadnik, you know how many letters the Rebbe has written to people who have gone off the derech and people who have children off the derech. And even in my doctorate with my cousin, with at that time Gojim, it was my cousin, Reb Dov Revel. So I collected whatever responsa I found that he wrote. And if you go into the Revel volume, any edition, there are four editions out, so you'll find in back the collection of responsa, and one of them is to from parents whose kid is intermarrying, should they sit shiva for the child? And this is a very interesting question. I can't go into details now, but it has been discussed. And he paskins la halacha that bizman hazeh we shouldn't sit shiva, keep the channels of communication open. And I've had this shaila a number of times, lo aleinu. I always answered, keep the channels of communication open. Even though I know a rav that I greatly admired, his daughter intermarried, and he sat shiva. I don't want to mention his name, Herbie.
Where did this come from, this idea of sitting shiva?
Well, it goes back to the Rishonim, the Franco-German period. It goes back to Rabbeinu Geshem and his child, and how many days did he sit shiva, etc., etc. There's a whole literature on it. Now, children are so important, you can't stop them from learning. Anyone can open up a Talmud Torah. They can open up a Talmud Torah next door. You can't claim Hasagat Gvul. The more the better. And a teacher, if he's a good Rebbe, he's going to attract. If he's not a good Rebbe, he'll go out of business.
But this is not relevant to the issue.
No, no.
The issue was, girls...
Yitzchak, you'll see how relevant that is. You'll see how relevant that is in 1 second. So I go into Choshen Mishpat, Kuf Nun Vav, Halacha Gimel, and you'll see the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins this question. V'chein yesh lo lilmod tinokat Yisrael Torah betoch beito. Look at the modern Hebrew here. V'yein ha-shcheinim yecholim limchot b'yado. V'lomalo, ein anu yecholim lishon mikol ha-tinokat shol beit rabim. V'hu adin dechol milei de mitzvah. So it's a very interesting halacha in the Choshen Mishpat that even in your own house, if for the sake of argument, you're making noise, putting up a mezuzah, a neighbor cannot stop you. In the sake of argument, you're making noise, a seder, and people are singing, a neighbor cannot stop you. Allah had come v'kama to teach children. Fine. Now you look into the commentary, the Sefer Me'irat Einayim, what's known as the Sma, Samach Mem Ayin, Sefer Me'irat Einayim, and he, this is Sifkat Hay, and he has a little comment there, and he says, yes, this halacha is based upon the Rambam, but nevertheless, we have to understand, She'im Hayam Lamed Letinokar Cheshbon Och Tishboret Yecholim limchot biyado. What is tishboret? Geometry. In other words, look what we have here. You want to be a melamed tinakot? Melamed tinakot, you can do what you want, how you want, where you want. No one can complain. No one can protest. But that's teaching Torah. If you're teaching the youngsters mathematics, tishboret, geometry, which I don't understand the word, but I have descendants who are big in it. And what does this mean? Anything outside of Torah? They can protest. Get out of here. What are you doing? You're making noise. This isn't Torah. This is core curriculum. Does this sound familiar, Simon? Core curriculum. You're living in Israel. You know what's going on here. Math. Today you need computers are the equivalent of geometry. English. Without English, you can't get off the floor. Even the Russians, you know, in Russia, they had high schools that were entirely in English. It's an amazing thing. And the brightest kids went there. They had to take Jews. They didn't have enough non-Jewish cup. There were a lot of Jews in these high schools. I know that from my work in Russia. And they came out of perfect English. I knew someone in Russia, Sophia Kogan, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha, her English was pure, the Queen's English. I couldn't believe it. I said, where did you get English like this? You were never outside of Leningrad. She said her teacher in high school had been part of the staff, the ambassador's staff in London. And you should have heard that English. So according to the SMA, yes, the Shulchan Aruch says no one can interfere. But if you're not teaching Torah, they can shut you down. You're making noise. Now we come back to Reb Menashe Klein. Alacha kama v'kama, you should protest and you should shut them down, because it's not that they're not just teaching Torah. They're teaching them to sing. Women singing b'prahesia. People walking by can hear. Lack of sneers. Absolutely protest if you can. Fine, fine. Yitzchak, relax. You're going to see later today. You missed my introduction. You'll pick it up on the tape. But don't get sick. Don't get sick, because I'll make you healthy and then you'll get sick again. But singing Barabim, even Zmirat, in their world, women don't sing. It's an Avera. So then he says something else, and this is very fascinating. And Hebrew, you see, Hebrew is a very difficult language for Americans. I listened to my dear student, Ariel Constantin, because I didn't know if he knows Hebrew or not. It turns out he does know Hebrew, and his father lived in Israel after the Holocaust and did Bat Brit here and did Army here. So he knows basic Hebrew, and he's at home. He can speak it. But he was still making mistakes in Zach and Akeva. And this is the hardest thing, because we don't have... See, if you're a Frenchman, you can learn Hebrew a lot easier, because they also have the distinction between male and female. The English language doesn't have it. But what makes it worse in Hebrew is that the rules are always made to be broken. Now, I'll give you a simple example. Tinok. What does Tinok mean? A youngster, a male youngster. What's the plural of tinok? Tinokot. No, tinokot is feminine form. No one says tinokim. Tinokot. So the Gemara talks about you're opening a cheder lelame tinokot. So the Mishnah Lachad is worried someone will come along and say to him, wait a minute, you're allowed to teach women anything. How can you close the cheder down? So he says, and he's in the tshuva, this is in the tshuva, he says, no, the pshat in tinokot is not females. It means children. And it's no proof that women have high priority that you can't close the cheder down. All right, now, do we have anyone I think next year, I hope we'll have a doctor in class, because I need someone to sit near Yitzchak to keep him calm. His blood pressure shouldn't shoot through. Now let me show you the last part of the tshuva, and let me tie it in with contemporary happenings, and let me tell you my take. I may be right, I may be wrong. And just Friday night, I'm sitting at the table where I'm at this elegant Friday night repast. The host is on a higher level than the Waldorf Astoria. If I recall correctly, this past Friday night, four forks were at each place setting. So you can draw your own conclusions. Now, there's 17 people sitting at the table, and sitting next to me is a very dear person because his brother, who died very young, was my first student when I came in Aliyah in 1969. Michael Fuld, he was among the first 10 students. That you're sitting here today is due to those 10 students in 69, BMT. And he was the first kid in Israel to call me Rebbe, to relate to me. I write about him in Washington. So this is Michael's brother, and his brother, we're talking about many, many topics, and he's, you know, he has opinions, and he's really angry at Rabbi Willick, what Rabbi Willick said. Halavai, we could not teach women. We made the biggest mistake. And he says to me, as many have said on the blogs and in the internet, the social media, as they call it, that there's a picture of Rabbi Willig when Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, gave the first shiur of Gemara at Stern College in 77. There is Rabbi Lamb sitting there, Rabbi Soloveitchik giving the shiur, Rabbi Saul Berman, head of Torah Studies at Stern at the time, and Mori Willig, who was teaching there. And he said, and he's carrying on and carrying on. So now I want to tell you, I want to quote the next paragraph from the Mishnah Halacha. It's exactly Rabbi Willick, word by word. It's Rabbi Menashe Klein. And he says, you know something? Halavai, we would not be teaching women Torah. Who needs these schools? Why do we have to get involved with women singing and people walking by? And Rabbi Klein understood there's no way you're going to stop them. It can be a Beit Yanka from today to tomorrow, but you got to teach kids to sing. And as Yitzchak said, you got to teach them smirat, you got to teach them feeling and shira, and even a few Kalbach songs, which have conquered the entire Jewish world, etc., etc., even the Haredi world. I just stopped in Friday night in Yeshurun because where I was going was the other part of Yerushalayim, and I wanted to be halfway there. And the Chazan I saw was a Haredi guy, and he's with Kalbach Nigunim, and everyone is singing along, and Baruch Hashem. So you're not going to close them down. But then Rabbi Klein describes what a beautiful world it was. A girl learned everything she had to know from her mother and grandmother. And then afterwards, she got married, married a Ben Torah. The entire environment was a reingesappt mit Yiddishkeit. Now, Simon, try to say that in English. Can anyone help me, Avraham? It was totally saturated. Yitzchak, is that a good word? A reingesappt. What do you think? Saturated. What do you say? No? Saturated, Herbie. You follow? With Yiddishkeit. Oh, that was a wonderful, wonderful world.
My Yiddish is better than my English, right?
Arangizapt, with Yiddishkeit. It was a beautiful world. My dear friends, even Rabbi Menashe Klein realizes we can't change back the clock. And then he catches himself, because what he says here, word by word, he realizes that if a Yitz Reuben picks this up, he's going to maledict him. So he says, yeah, with all that I've said, Hinei hagam shakahayom nahagu kol habanot leilech lecheder kmo habanim. Ublei preira kinere midim. Eit la asot la shem hefiru toratecha. And therefore he says, I don't want to be negative. We don't have a choice today, but we have to teach them to be modest, not to sing in public, not the female teachers, not the Talmidot, not to sing if the school is in a neighborhood where Jewish men live. I want to tell you in parentheses, find me a neighborhood in Brooklyn where there are no Jewish men. But that's what he paskins la halacha. And he's, you know, more or less the halacha as he sees it is on one level. But on the other level, he realizes, what can we do? Times have changed. In my humble understanding of my colleague, Rabbi Morty Willig, I know the whole family very well, and I taught many members of the family, including his own children and his in-laws, etc. I think what Morty Willig was expressing, and I stated this before in the Kollel, I stated again, look, we all look back on our childhood as being fabulous. If we're normal, balanced people, if God forbid we look back in anger, the psychologists and psychiatrists are making a bundle off of us. But I know, I look back on my childhood, and believe me, I was a poor kid in a neighborhood. It was not a wealthy neighborhood. You had to balance every penny. When I bought a New York Times for 2 cents or 3 cents, I had to make a chesed. Do I have the money? But I look back, what a childhood. Salanta Yeshiva, the Shanghai crowd. Imagine a kid in seventh grade is sitting and learning with someone who's an outstanding graduate of Mir and Bris. Could you imagine? And all right, he's speaking Yiddish, I'm speaking English, but I learned Yiddish, he learned a little English. I took his son, Heshi, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, what a kid, never, God takes the best, died young. So I came home and I said to Reb Henech, Rebbe, I'll say it in English, though I'm living it in Yiddish, Simon, I want you to follow. I say to my Rebbe, I made your son into an American today. And he looks at me, what did you do? I said, I took him to a Yankee game. And I want to tell you, he was proud, you know. This was part of America. You got to know that today you go to a Yankee game, you see hundreds of Satmar Hasidim sitting there. And I was with I was upset. That's what they're wasting their time on. Let them study Rav Kook's writing if they have spare time. And my student said to me, Rebbe, you don't understand. Everyone needs a break. And this is a kosher break for them. It's not drinking. It's not women. It's not song. It's a Yankee game. So this is the way I understand Morty Willig. Exactly like Reb Menashe Klein. Halavai, we could turn back the clock. But the reality is we can't, and we have to deal with it. And guys like Rakef, I was about to say dummies, but a Talmud of mine just sent me a letter of protest that he doesn't like when I call myself a dummy. So I think, I have to use Yiddish. Our Rabbein used to say, Rabbi Yochum Gerelik used to say, Efshe binechana, aba zagresena binechnisht. Maybe I'm a fool, but such a big fool I'm not. By the way, the Rebbe used to say something like that too. It is a literature expression. So I know we can't turn back, but we have to make the most of it. We have to work out that we can teach women and they can have self-expression, and it should be within a halachic context. Adkan, this topic. Now, here with Yitzhak, you have to understand, why does your sidekick Ani, who you know for so many generations, not just decades, we know each other from our high school years, Bnei Akiva, why am I so enthralled about Reb Menashe Klein? He was a Lamdin Mufak. He has a sense of humor. He tells a good story. I saw him on YouTube dealing with Balei Tshuva. I was blown away. But there's something else about him. He answers every question he received. And I know with Reb Moshe that I sent him some questions, I got answers. Later in the 70s, and by the way, our guest who sat with me Friday night was furious. He said they surrounded Reb Moshe with people who, intercepted, vetoed, made decisions for him. And he says the same thing with this gadol and that gadol. It may be true in the sense I once wrote Reb Moshe a question. I've discussed it in the Kollel over the decades. It's a very difficult question. I'm walking home Friday night, a half-hour walk. And a car stops and asks me directions. Now, this is a Jew. It's not an Arab. It's a Jew. What do I do? If I give him directions, it could be Lifnei Velotitei Michshol. It could be Misayei Lidei Avera. On the other hand, if I give him directions, I can save 10, 15 minutes of Chilul Shabbos. He'll know how to go, won't get caught in one way the wrong way. So I wrote to Reb Moshe. I never got an answer. Very fascinating. I never got an answer. Later, I spoke with the Rav. I spoke with Rabbi Lichtenstein. There was a machlokes between them. The Rav told me, give him exact directions as carefully as you can. Let him be mamayik b'chilul Shabbos. And I think there's another factor too, which I don't want to, it's, again, these topics, if I touch them and go into them, it's hours. Mishumeva, you don't want him to hate you. He knows you're Jewish, he thinks you're looking down upon him, you want to throw stones at him. Give him a, Reb Aaron felt it was Messiah Ledei Avera, it's not your concern how far he drives. You have to tell him, you don't know, you don't live in the neighborhood. Ani lo makomi, that's the expression. In Tel Aviv, people stopped us, asked us directions, walking. And I told them, Anachnu lo makomiim, Anachnu rakhan l'sof shavua, the Shabbat hazote. Okay, Reb Menashe Klein, he gets a very fascinating question that opens up the heart of an issue which ate our hearts out in the 1950s. It's dealing with mechitza. David, here, say, join us.
You're
right at the start of a new sugya, where when this is a class in Shas Paiskim, especially responsa literature and the world in which we live, and it began in 78, and we still haven't repeated one lecture. Everything is new and ongoing, and the Eibishter should give us strength. We need another 120 years, at least. So, this question comes to Reb Menashe Klein, and here you have the Ungabara Rav, living in Baropak, Hungarian, and it comes to him from the heart of the religious Zionist movement. And it deals with the problem that haunted us, that none of you can understand what the battle was. Today, you fellas going into the rabbinate, and those of you that are going back to the States, I saw the questions you were asked. And it's all dealing with feminism. How do you, will you take a congregation where the women dance with the Torah on Simchas Torah? How do you feel about the mechitza? Should it be in the back of the shul, on the side, the men and women? What do you think about a balcony? 101 different questions. What happens if a woman offers her hand? And you all have to answer that. When we went into the rabbin, there was only one question they asked us. Will you take a shul without a mechitza? It was very hard to come by shuls with a mechitza. This was the tremendous breakdown in America that even a wonderful rabbi like Rabbi David de Sola Poole, who was rabbi of the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue, said in a book, it's a composite portrait by Oscar Janowski, Professor Janowski, Zichrono Levracha, who taught at CCNY, if I'm not mistaken, the City College of New York, which was then like Columbia University. If a rich kid went to Columbia, and a kid who didn't have money but was bright went to CCNY, and a lot of geniuses came out of CCNY as well. So he was interviewed, the Sola Poole, prominent Orthodox rabbi, and in the article he says, this is before, it's 42 the book came out, he says, I quote, I paraphrase, that I'm afraid that in America, for Torah to survive, they're going to have to compromise on the mechitza. He says, in my synagogue, there'll always be a mechitza because we don't view it, my congregants don't view it as a religious requirement, but as tradition, that we're the oldest synagogue in the United States, and we've always had a balcony separation between men and women. But he says he doesn't see it continuing in the rest of the United States. And the women, you understand, the women were right. They're out in the world, they have doctors, they're lawyers, they're going to university, they're going to graduate school. Rabbi, why should I be separated from my family, my husband? Why do I have to sit behind the partition? And you know, older ladies, I'm used to sitting next to my husband. We do this together, we do that together. Why, when I come to the temple, do I have to separate? And more than anyone else, Moriah Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, stood and fought a tremendous battle. He was not a fighter. He was very reticent. He suffered in the 30s. Again, if you've seen the documentary that I was privileged to bring to the world, The Lonely Man of Faith, Yomo, he suffered because in Boston, the Shreichtim fought with him, other rabbis fought with him, Balabatan fought with him, and from that time on in life, he shied away from any public stance. When I learned in Lakewood, one of the criticisms I used to hear, tomorrow I'll talk about a criticism I heard about the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and this is a criticism I heard about the Rav, that he's not a fighter, he's not a, you know, that way he, I understand him, I know in my own little life, and who am I to even compare myself with the giants I just mentioned, but I know my own life, the last machlokes I had was back in 1961. I haven't been involved in machlokes ever since, and you can check it. My life is an open book. It was over the non-kosher bottle of wine. We've spoken, we wrote, yeah. Charlie Liebman became, Professor Liebman became famous off my tzaras. That was his first article, and from that he became Professor Charlie Liebman, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. Okay, so now you talk about mechitza. What is a mechitza? How big does a mechitza have to be? What is the minimum for a mechitza? What is behind the idea of a mechitza? And here I want to give you all the basic sources. It's a very fascinating topic, but I can't deal with Reb Menashe Klein before I deal with the original shtei tshuva, the two responsa. And believe it or not, at this moment in time, this name every Jew in the world knows. Unfortunately, Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin. Henkin, recognize the name? Who is Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin? This is a grandson of the great Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. When I was growing up, the leading posek in America was Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. Rav Henkin was a Slutsker, was a Slutsker Talmud. He studied, he knew the Ritbaz, he knew Rabbi Sazaman Meltzer, he knew Rabbi Moshe Aaron Palev, and he wound up being Rav in the areas of Russia where it's mainly Eidot HaMizrach. From there, he came to America, and right during World War I, they organized in America, we'll talk about this down the line in the Monday class in years to come, they organized Ezras Torah. Ezras Torah, I'm pronouncing it the way they do, not Ezrat Torah. Yomo, wake him up. You'll sleep tonight. Anyone else, I wouldn't wake up, but I know your habits. Nighttime for sleep, daytime into the evening for learning Torah. Did you know Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin? You're talking to someone that spoke with him in learning, so listen carefully. Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin was the sweetest human being you would ever meet. He ran the Ezras Torah. He lived on the east side of New York, two houses down from Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. They once raised his salary, refused to take a raise. He lived on bread and water. He wouldn't take an extra penny. The people in Europe needed, the people in Palestine needed. He ran Ezras Torah. He was a great posek. Everyone turned to him with their shilas, myself included. Now, Rav Henkin, his sons, one of them became very famous. He was the Harold Fisk International Professor at Law at Columbia University. All his children were Shomer Shabbos. It's a great achievement at that time in America. His daughter later was the caterer, the Webbers. Do you remember the Webbers? She was the caterer. She provided the food at Yeshiva University for the yeshiva. She and her husband, he was a Hungarian immigrant that got out of Hungary at some point in the early 50s. One son died young, was a student at Yeshiva Shmuel Chanan, died young. Mark Shapiro writes about it in his latest blog. I made a slight correction there last time we met last Monday. And then there was one son who was a teacher. I believe he taught in Talmud Torahs, maybe day schools in Brooklyn. And he had a son, Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin, who should only be well. Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin never went to a yeshiva gavohak. He's a Flatbush graduate. Then he went on to university. But he was the grandson who stayed with his grandfather every possible moment. And he studied with his grandfather. And he became a very big Talmud Chacham. He comes in Aliyah, marries Chana Henkin, recognize the name. Some of you are married to women who studied with Chana Henkin in Nishmat. Chana Henkin is a Stern College graduate and the recipient of an honorary doctorate from Yeshiva University. And this is this is the couple. They came in Aliyah a few years after we did, and he winds up a rabbi in the Beit Shan Valley for the Mizrach HaDatat. So you're talking about a religious Zionist rabbi in a religious Zionist setting, working for the Mizrach HaDatat, which in those days was totally controlled by the religious Zionist movement, unlike today, controlled by the Mizrahi. And he writes an interesting shaila to Rav Menashe Klein, and you'll see the love and understanding between them. And what's the shaila? I'm quoting now, Shaila to Tshuvat B'nei Banim. Now, the name of his response literature is very fascinating. Why is it B'nei Banim? Indicating who his grandfather was. In other words, I'm only what I am because of my grandfather. Response literature of the grandchildren. And he has four volumes. I've gone through all four with a tooth comb out today. Shaila to Tshuvat B'nei Banim. I'm quoting Chelik Aleph, Siman Aleph. This was published in 1981. I have a great affinity for the Henkins because when they relocated in Jerusalem, their first apartment they rented in the building in which I live, 18 Berlin. In 18 Berlin, there's one apartment that's a hegdish. Do you know what that word means in modern Hebrew? Yiddish is used too, a hegdish, but you have to know what it means in modern Hebrew. The apartment was bought when my building was built in 68-69. So the original families, we all knew each other very well. One apartment was bought by a man who never married, but the dwelling business, lived on the Upper West Side, and he put furniture in. He was coming in Aliyah, and before he could come, he died. In his will, he left the apartment to Yeshivat Hebron. So that apartment is owned by Yeshivat Hebron until today, and it's rented out by the yeshiva. It's a constant income. They're not going to sell the apartment because it brings in a nice income. It's a good neighborhood, and the apartment is, the income is more valuable today than anything else. Now, they lived in my building, and I got to know them. I don't have to tell you, Hannah Henkin is world famous. She's a personality. She's learned. She has vision. Yehuda is more reticent and has some of the characteristics of a genius, a big lamdan, and he understands the contemporary world. He's a Flatbush graduate, with all that that means. It's like telling you he's a Ramaz graduate from that period. He understands the contemporary world. Now, what's the question? Here he is in the Beit Shan Valley. The Beit Shan Valley has a lot of kibbutzim and a lot of settlements that are religious Zionist settlements. He doesn't tell you exactly where this happened. He writes to Levadli Enei Dat B'Moshav Echad. He's writing to a Moshav, to their Committee on Religious Matters. And what's the question here? All right, let me shift gears altogether and show you how this question comes up in modern times, something we never ever dreamt about in our youth. You build a sukkah. Tell me, how do you build a sukkah? In my youth, you built a sukkah with wood, and you put schach on top. Later in the 60s, Sperel Foundation came up with a canvas sukkah. Oh, that was a big innovation. I don't have to tell you today, right on the streets of Jerusalem, Petach Tikva, Bnei Brak, etc., before Sukkot, piles and piles of canvas sukkahs rolled up. You can get one this size, that size, gigantic size. That's the way we build a sukkah. Tell me, you never saw this in halacha. What about you build a sukkah and it's canvas and you don't tie it down properly? And the sukkah shakes. The bottom, the winds blow, and the canvas, the wall, shakes back and forth. No, have you seen the shaila in modern times? Before sukkahs, you'll see, they called Rav Avadya, called this one, be sure to tie it down. It has to be a proper partition to be considered a wall. The expression in halacha is, it has to be a mechitza she'ein gedim bokim bo. That's the expression in halacha. You can see it in the tshuva I'm citing now, that gedim, little goats, can crawl through. All right? This is, we can understand the sukkah. At least two of the walls have to be very solid. The third can be very small, but you have to have a partition. You have to have a wall. Today, in my sukkah, I build a sukkah within two of the walls. I don't even need the canvas. I have it anyway, but it's part of my terrace. Then the third wall, I need the canvas. But Baruch Hashem, today we build in Israel. It's a not. You buy in a building, and you'll find that many buildings advertise, particularly when they're building for Tzioni Dati people or Haredim, you'll see they advertise, not only do you have a storage space and a place to park your car, you also have a terrace on which to build a sukkah. And it's interesting how they design the buildings. You can look at my building. It is so designed that every apartment has a place to build a sukkah. It's here, it's here, here, it's here, here, it's here. In other words, it shouldn't be covered. It's very fascinating. And in Jerusalem today, due to the fact that the city council is controlled by religious Jews, Kanayin Hara, so any change you want to make in your apartment, they'll eat your heart out and give you a spit in your face and charge you for seltzer. That was a book by Harry Golden for 2 cents plain. But they didn't know Harry Golden is. But it was Sid. It was Jerry Seinfeld of a much earlier generation. So fine, if you want to build a sukkah terrace, they will accommodate you very quickly. They're under orders to help Jews build sukkah terraces. Now, let's talk about a mechitza. You put up a big curtain, for the sake of argument, 7 foot tall, but the curtain doesn't go to the floor. Okay? It's a number of tvachim. It's more than 3 tvachim above the floor. The curtain isn't tied down. It shakes in the wind. Is that a good mechitza or isn't it a good mechitza? And why did I say a mechitza 7 foot tall? Because now you come to the very, very heart of the problem. What is the requirement of a mechitza? What does it have to accomplish? And here, let me give you sources, very important, check them out. Someone wants to get credit for a collegiate course here, a graduate course, and they're complaining I don't give assignments. You're right, in this kollel, you have to learn your day, you have to pass exams, or chayim, gemara, rakefet, you have to sit back and just listen. If you don't learn, I deserve the flunk, okay? But if you come, you pass. But this look up, don't take my word for it, but very fascinating. Gentlemen, what do we need a mechitza for? All right, don't give me all the pulpulim now, men and women and sexual tension and all that. Rabbi Soloveitchik testified in the cases in the 1950s that went to secular court in America. Why do we need a mechitza? All right, what's the source for mechitza? Look into the Perish HaRambam on the Mishnah. I'm quoting from the Kapach edition. You're all aware that there are many editions of the Perish HaRambam Al HaMishnayot. The Rav Yosef Kapach edition is the best edition in the world because Rav Kapach, who I had the schut of seeing a number of times, hearing him speak, his Arabic was native. So he could go back to the Rambam's original Arabic and retranslate it into modern Hebrew. He was a Yemenite. His wife was a tzaddikit. It's a beautiful, beautiful family. It's a different world. She was like 13 when she married him. and she never looked back. Go and tell these to the kids today who are hunting and hunting. And I know what I went through with my grandchildren, going through with my grandchildren, hunting and hunting and hunting. They had halavai, we could change back the clock, like I said before. You'll be 15, she's 13, you marry, and you live happily ever after. Rebbe, I wanna, you're living in a dream world, but all right, I'm dreaming a beautiful dream. Anyway, the whole question of Mechitza comes up. Those of you that have learned Masechet Sukkah, you know it's a sugya, daf nun, nun aleph, nun bet. In the Beit HaMikdash, men and women came in by the hundreds of thousands, millions perhaps. No, how do you keep them from indecorous events happening? I don't have to tell you that a human being remains a human being, okay? We all know what's going on in the Torah world today, and as I've told you more than once, if anyone calls me rabbi, I get very upset. It's not a title of honor for me today. If I taught you Torah, it's Rebbe, and if I didn't teach you Torah, it's Aaron or Ani, whatever name you know me by. But in the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't know what to do. So they experimented. And you can look up the sugya. First they had the men in front, the women in back. Then they had the women next to the men. Then they had the women on top, the men on the bottom, until they achieved an environment where there was stability and no indecorous behavior. Now, this becomes very important because the Simchat Beit HaShoeva was a high point of the year. Anyone who has a Hasidic neshama will tell you the start of Hasidus begins with the Simchat Beit HaShoeva. It's all in the sugya, it's Perikhet of the Rambam as well, in Hilchat Lulav Yetrog, and then he goes into Sukkah afterwards, and you'll see the description, and they have to separate the men and women because people are going wild at the Simchat Beit HaShoeva. So, Perek Hay in Sukkot, Mishnah Bet, Motzai Yontov HaRishon Shalchag, Hayu Yordin Li Esrat HaNashim, Umetaknim Sham Tikun Gadol. That Motzai Shabbos of the Chag, they're going to have the first Simchat Beit HaShoeva. All of you know that since I know in Yerushalayim, the people come in from Europe, from Belgium, from London, from France, just to participate in a Simchat Beit HaShoeva, that their Rebbe, it's a high point of the year, and at Heichal Shlomo, in the courtyard, the great synagogue, there's a Simchat Beit HaShoeva, and it's a high point. Who didn't participate this past Sukkot in some Simchat Beit HaShoeva? So they made a Tikkun Gadol. And that's the whole Gemara. What does it mean by the Tikkun Gadol? What do you do with the men? What do you do with the women? How do you keep them separate? Why? So the Perush HaRambam LeMishnayot, why did they need this Tikkun Gadol? Umakom HaNashim LeMala? Almakom HaNashim Gavoah Mimenu? The women ultimately wound up on top, a balcony. Those of you who davened in KJ know what I'm talking about, a balcony. It's something rare today, but that's a shul that still retains its balcony. Why? Kidei shelo yistaklu ha'anashim b'nashim. Men and women are not allowed to see each other, to look at each other, at a time of davening. Okay? This Rambam, if this is his viewpoint, shelo yistaklu, underline it. Now you can understand the tremendous machloket that broke out in America. Rav Moshe Feinstein, you take the Aruch Chaim, the Yigrot Moshe, the first volume, subsequent volumes, how high does the mechitza have to be? And Rav Moshe writes 60, 65 inches, but it doesn't have to cover the women entirely. According to Rav Moshe, you will not wind up with a situation where they won't be able to see each other, at least b'diavad. In other words, we're talking where it's a rabbi out in the field he wants a mechitza, the balabatim are negotiating with him, they want the lowest mechitza possible. According to Reb Meisha, they could see each other. The satma element went crazy. You see, until 1960, a great Rav Kapaskin, what he wishes, and people, either you accept it, you don't, but there was never machloket, never public fighting. Unfortunately, when satma got strong in America and started to rise after the Holocaust and children and more children, by the 60s, they were very adamant and public in their stance. And this is one issue where they differed with Reb Meisha, not always in a decorous fashion. The other issue, of course, which we won't go into now, is AID, artificial insemination. And in my next book coming out, you'll have all the information there. It's literally all the shurim I gave in the kollel are written up in a very beautiful fashion. I thank my Talmud Dr. Yaakov Weinstein for the first draft. And you'll see, when it came to AID, literally artificial insemination from a Gentile that Reb Meisha was matir, the satma persecuted him. Oh, publicly, privately, that ultimately he needed bodyguards. And you see today with the Tamar Epstein case of Baltimore, it has turned into an absolute cause celebre that reaches proportions of the Cleves Gett controversy in 1766 that totally shook up the Torah world and paved the way for the Haskalah to come in and take over. It just divided the Torah world so. And you see this today, and today it's all the more because of the social media. What happens in little Baltimore, suddenly everyone in Jerusalem is talking about, etc., etc. Okay? So this is the Rambam. The Rambam says, Perish HaMishnayot. Yitzchak, open up the Mishnah Torah and you're in a different world. Natan, Hilchat Lulav. I just spoke about this. Perikhet, Halakha Yud Bet. But be aware, Yomo, it's not Hilchat Lulav and Etrog at this point, it's Hilchat Sukkah. But since the Rambam began talking about Lulav and Etrog, that remains the nomenclature, the rubric for this section of the Rambam. And I'm quoting from the Rambam, Halacha Yud Bet, V'keitzat hayu olsin erev yontef harishon, hayu mitaknin b'mikdash makom l'nashim me'lamala ul'anashim me'lamata kedei shelo yitarvu elu im elu. David, it's totally different. It's the same Rambam. Doesn't mention they can't see each other. He says they can't mix. What does it mean, mix? Like Reb Meisha says, it has to be a partition to keep them from physical contact. Okay?
Is that
just like Reb Meisha, giddy, yeah.
Is that the main basis for, I mean, I've seen a little bit here, but it's mainly like Sinai and places like that where you have mosquitoes that are pretty much just clear glass?
Yeah, absolutely, this is the basis. But you can ask me that much later. I'm just scratching the surface now. Yeah, Shia, yeah.
Literally says that the men shouldn't look on the women. Doesn't say you shouldn't look at each other. It seems to be focusing on men shouldn't look at the women.
Yeah, no. Well, we're talking about men not looking at the women. That's the way God made the world. That there was just a whole article. What's going on in Israel?
The men are not going to. They have to sort of madrich themselves.
Right. No, that, absolutely. The women can look at the men. No. I have to tell you, there was a very interesting article in, again, I may be B'Sheva, I read it, because I didn't see Makor Rishon yet. So you know what's going on with Sulban Shalom. I mean, I don't have to right. You know, what's going on here? The world is shaking. So you get involved in the whole question. Remember, in our world, we know we have to keep a physical distance from a lady, okay? This is built into our thinking, to our lifestyle, to our commitment to Torah. In the non-religious world, you know, a woman is a woman and they make comments and they whistle, And where do you draw the line? And in this article, I may have seen it in Yediot, he makes the point that, look, God made the world, and this I spoke about in the Monday class years and years ago, maybe more than a decade ago. I gave a whole year on love and marriage. And, you know, God made the world that a man is attracted by a woman. Most women, when they look at a man, his looks are a secondary factor. It's his personality, his abilities, his goals, his visions. A man, you understand that, I don't want to elaborate. They say about the Ungarische Rabbanim that they were very frum. How do you know it? Because you look at what their wives looked at. They say the Polish Rabbanim, oh boy, you look at their wives, it was a different world, quote unquote. So they were on a different level. I'm not giving any value judgment. I'm just making a comment. And let me tell you, I've seen pictures of Rebbeim and their wives. So there's a lot of truth to it. And the Pailish Rebbeim, I know many. I have good friends, Rishona children, Rishona Einklach, what we call, etc., etc. All right. Now, where do you draw the line? A man is attracted, so he says to women, "You're good looking." I don't want to say anything vulgar. I end here. You can take it further. Says something else to a woman. Then he touches her. To him, touching, what's the big deal? Touching, affection. I admire your looks. Where do you draw the line? And this is a problem built into the human being who is not a Ben Torah. If you're a Ben Torah, then, of course, the halacha states clearly where the line is. And this is the way you have to live. This is the way you have to observe. This is the way you have to conduct yourself. And take a look at the problems we have today. Again, with Rabbanim, it's very, very frightening. It's a miyut hanikra today of Rabbanim in our world, in the Haredi world, in the Sfadik world, whatever world you want to look at. Look at some of the problems. So the Rabbanim all quote, I can't get over it, Chazal say, Misha gadol mechavero, Yitzro gadol mechavero. And I never understood that. I hate to say, I've lived to finally understand it to my distress. Ribbono shel Olam, I grew up with the Rav, with Rav Moshe, with Rav Yosef Elio Henkin, with Rav Aaron Kotler. Who could think that? I don't even want to mouth it. But that's why the women could look at the men. It's that the men, we don't want to look at the women to be distracted. Prayer is prayer. But the Rambam uses the Lashon here, Kidei Shelo Yitaravu. Kidei Shelo Yitaravu makes Reb Moshe 100% correct. Now, it's not the only Rambam. Hilchat Beit HaBechira. Perikei, Halacha Tet. This is the famous Rambam that in Israel today has become so important and so, I would say, tangible. It's a Rambam that when we studied had no practicality. Today you know that World War III broke out here because Jews are going up to the Har Habayit and Jews are talking about rebuilding the Beis Hamikdash. And all of you know, on Chol HaMoed Pesach and Chol HaMoed Sukkot, the Machon HaMikdash in the Old City has on display in the Old City Kalim, a menorah that was already built for the Beit HaMikdash, Yibana Ben Kerev Yemenu. And again, today, Hilchot Beit HaBechira, new Perikei Halacha Tet. Ezrat Nashim Haita Mukefet Kitsatera. Kidei sheyu hanashim ro'ot me'lamalon v'hanashim me'lamata. I'm not finished with the halacha, but let me explain the words. I went to a Hebrew English Hebrew dictionary, and the word satara does not exist. I went to Jastro, and there I found it, but the word is exactly what I thought it to mean, that they built a border around the women had to go on top. This was the border, Adkan. They could look down, but the men had to be underneath. Why all this precaution? Kidei shelo yiyu me'uravim. that the men and women shouldn't intermingle, shouldn't mix. Hilchat Beit HaBechira, exactly like Hilchat Sukkah. Well, if this is the case, you now have a haunting question. The Rambam is the only one to discuss this issue, the only one to paskin halacha lizman hazeh and halacha latid lebo hilchata demeshichata. Who is the real Rambam? And this takes me back to shiurim I gave again quite a few years ago. What if a posek contradicts himself? Classic example, anyone here who studied Mishpat Ivri, anyone here who's a lawyer, Mishpat Ivri, Professor Alone, Professor Menachem Alone, he deals with this in great detail. And you take the Shulchan Aruch, he wrote the Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam, he wrote the Beis Yosef on the Torah, he wrote the Shulchan Aruch. What if he contradicts himself? Who do you paskin like? And Professor Menachem Alone deals with this question. We have an entire volume called Yad Malachi, written perhaps 300 years ago. It's been published and reprinted on occasion. Very important volume dealing with who do we paskin like? Contradictions, questions, a person, did he change his mind? Who is right? No. Here we have two Rambams and Mishneh Torah. Kedei shelo yitarvu. We have one Rambam in Perish HaMishnayot. Kedei shelo yistaklu. Who is right? Rule of the thumb. The Rambam in Mishneh Torah is the ultimate Rambam. And there are many, many reasons why. One is simply, he wrote it later. But there's a much deeper reason why that, to me, means a great deal as a Jew sitting in Yerushalayim, in Medinat Yisrael, in the year 2016. A great deal. You see, the Rambam wrote three classic works, Perish HaMishnayot, Moreh Nevuchim, and the Mishneh Torah. What did he write the Moreh Nevuchim in? What language? Avraham? Fill me in. Arabic. What did he write the Perish HaMishnayos in? Fill me in, Danny. What language?
Arabic.
All right. Schottenstein is in English. Sansino is in English. This Is My God by Herman Wouk is in English. So many books have been written by NCSY in outreach in English and Esh HaTorah and in Chabad as well. Yes, Yeshiva University, their press. Well, these books are written in response to contemporary problems. We are being challenged at every moment. This is life. This is life in the real world. We live in a dual society. We can't go back to the ghetto. Gevetosha v'nochi machem, as I've spoken about so many times. If you hear a Baron Kanz talk on Hanukkah talk, the Hellenism, exactly the same thing. We live in two worlds. So we're always battling the Jew who is led astray by the Hellenists, by the New York Times, by the liberals, by the humanists, by North Tel Aviv. Call it what you wish. Could you imagine Jews are going to Chutz Laretz from Eretz Yisrael, from Medinat Yisrael, and criticizing the IDF in front of the New York Times in New York? It's despise imagination. All right.
How about the president?
So, say then that we don't have to get involved now. He should not have attended that conference, in my humble opinion. But leave it stand. The president is the president, and we do well not to criticize. Real power he doesn't have. He just represents us as royalty, as the Queen of England. But This is a reality. So we write in English. We write in German. What did Rav Hirsch write in? The Rambam wrote in Arabic. That is halacha l'sha'a. He's dealing with halacha, hashkafa, philosophy, theology, Moshe, the challenges at that moment in time. The Mishnah Torah is in beautiful, magnificent Hebrew. It is the Rambam's contribution to eternity. He is writing for all Jews, all situations, all generations. That is in Lashon HaKodesh. And we always will paskin like the Mishnah Torah over the Perish HaMishnayot. So that from the point of view of what the Rambam thinks, we will always say, Mishnah Torah wins out, Shelo Yitarvu. Now, okay, I want to show you the practical consequences. What, I can't hear.
I thought that was only because he was older.
No, I'm saying that he was older. It was a work that was written later. But I'm adding a added understanding, okay? It was written in Hebrew. When you write in Hebrew, you're writing for eternity. It's very different than writing in the vernacular of the time in which you live. All right, you don't have to accept what I'm saying. You can go back. It was written later. I'm adding a added tinge, an added you as a religious Zionist. My whole being is religious Zionism. To me, my Zionism is part of my Torah. I don't see how you can be a Torah Jew without loving the land and kissing the stones. But, okay, thank you. But I hope I'm getting an amen across the world from all those listening. But now, L'may nafkemina. What's the difference? Now you can start to understand. If you hold it's shelo yistaklu, it means you need a mechitza of 7 foot. Today, ladies are tall. We used to say 6 foot. I came home, I told my wife, my doctor is retiring. Oh, why, you graduate? A young man yet, retiring. I guess someone said to me, a Talmud said to me, who comes to the Monday class, so he said, Rebbe, you have to understand, you deal with life, you deal with halacha, you deal with hashkafa, you deal with new sources, you're always happy, you're always challenged, you're always fulfilled. Think of a doctor, all he deals with are people coming to him with complaints, this is wrong, that is wrong, the medicine doesn't work, this medicine should I take, how many times should I take it, why did this happen, I need a referral, I have to see. No, he has a right to burn out. So with my doctor retiring, the question is, which doctor do I go to in the group? And they brought in a new lady doctor. So, all right, I told them I would prefer, maybe I shouldn't feel this way, but I don't know. Let me go for my basic doctor. It should be a male. Okay, maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. But I saw her for the first time, young lady. And my doctor was like breaking her in and teaching her how this branch of Terem works. And my first reaction, I came home and told my wife, wow, she probably was 4 or 5 inches taller than I am. And I, when I grew up, you never saw a woman. If a woman was 5'7", 5'8", and today, Kanayin Hara, we have Jewish kids that are 7'2", playing basketball, and we have women that are tall. Wow. So you need a 7-foot mechitza? Shelo yistaklu. Now you should know, on this topic, and I measure my words, there are no two greater antagonists than Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook and Rav Yoel Teitelbaum, the Satmar Rebbe. On two issues, they totally agree. One issue is, you are not allowed to wear a tie. A tie serves no purpose. Your belt holds up your pants, your shirt, your pants, everything else serves a purpose. A tie is sheer shachtsanut, in our show-offness, a gaiva. No tie, That they agree. The second thing they agree on, mechitza, 7 foot. The men and women, shelo yistaklu, that's the way a mechitza has to be. Now, if you take the Rambam, shelo yitarvu, then a mechitza's purpose is demarcation. This is a woman's area, this is a man's area, and it could be Reb Moshe is absolutely right, 6 to 65 inches. Then you go even further. And all of those listening who are my age group, remember with the Rav, we used to drive Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, crazy with our shilas about mechitza. And Rebbe, there was never a mechitza in the shul, and the balabatim of fighting and arguing. And the Rav Bidiavad gave a psak that is quoted time and again, and at least in the 50s into the 60s, that Bidiavad, if you can't help it, then a mechitza of 10 tfachim is sufficient. 10 tfachim, essentially 48, 50 inches. One of the big shuls in New York, I don't know today, but Jewish Center, you can tell me, the mechitza, is it still that small today?
First of all, the women's section was elevated slightly.
So they can have a higher mechitza.
So it was elevated slightly, but you were clearly the women were able to look at the men, and the men were able to look at the women. I mean, it was higher from the ground, but
right.
The Rav said
b'di'evet, lachatchila. Everyone agrees that there's no b'di'evad, but the Rav Shita is demarcation. Demarcation is like a mechitza in a sukkah, 10 tefachim. You have to know. Do you see the way they build sukkah? Wise guys can build a sukkah in Israel, a fence. And the schach is up here, and it's lavud. As long as it's 10 tfachim, it's a kosher mechitza, a kosher sukkah. They built a sukkah like that in the shtiblach, Rabbi Yani Rund, why you musmach? For years, he built a shtibl, a sukkah like that in the shtiblach. But you can have many variations. If you're not worried about the men looking at the women or being able to see the women, then the role of mechitza is to mark the area off. Now, obviously, if it's a mechitza where the men and women can look at each other, then you have a separate problem that all of us in the rabbinate had. When you have a bar mitzvah, you have a nufruf, and the hamon ha'am comes, people who are not observant, and the women come in, and you know the styles and dresses in the way women dress at fancy affairs. If I can quote the Lubavitcher Rebbe from a sicha that he gave in the early 70s, I was living in Israel already for a number of years, but I remember Rabbi Manny Holzer recorded it. I think it was on the radio in New York. He was able to record it from the radio, and he brought me, it was about 4 or 5 cassettes of that Yud Tet Kislev, and the Rebbe said, I quote him, the Rebbe said, he was relating in the early 70s, the hemline went way, way, way up, and the Rebbe said, by us in the Haggadah it says, Kol hamaber hareze mishubach. The longer it is, the better. And he says, Haintas a mother, today there's a fashion that when it comes to women's clothes, Kol hamakatzer hareze mishubach. So you have a problem. Can you imagine the rabbi is getting up to speak and you're looking at the audience? And half the women are dressed. I don't want it to go further. Sleeveless is the least problem, okay? I don't want to go further. So you see, there are variations here. You got to make it clear in the shul there's a certain way to dress when you come in. But now I want to make one more point, a very, very important point. And next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, I will show you the sources inside. Okay. I want to ask you a question. You fellas are studying for smicha. Right or wrong? Yitzhanai have smicha many generations. But all right, we're studying Torah lahagdil, Torah lahadira. But Yomo and Avraham and Dani, you're studying for smicha. Shaya too, right? You come back studying for smicha. Reads, why you? So what's the first thing? What's the first thing we're taught? What's the first thing we teach? We teach people that if you have a shayla, you have to look it up. And what does it mean to look it up? Generally speaking, 90% of the shaylot we will get today is Orach Chaim, you take a Mishnah Brura, you look it up. All right, occasionally I heard the Yoredei Shir before, I heard Orach Chaim, Rabbi Benash is teaching Orach Chaim, but I remember last year, Yoredei, you can have a shayla, there are many shaylas in Yoredei, so you have to look it up, a spoon, a fork, a kli, a ben yomo, an ein ben yomo, whatever the shaylas are, you have to look it up. Fine. Tell me, we have a shaila, we've come to a shul, we're building a new shul. Everyone is excited about it. And the rabbi says, look, this has to be an Orthodox shul. We want a machitza. So the balabatim will say, look it up. What does the Shulchan Aruch say? Rabbi, you taught us to look it up. My dear students, you can open up all Dalad Chelkei Shulchan Aruch and you will not find one syllable about a mechitza. Right or wrong. It's interesting. And you should know that in the seminary when they were still concerned with Halacha and JTS, when the 1930s, the 40s, when the mechitzot started to disappear, and seminary people, I mean, and I document this, by the way, in my first book, in my doctorate, Revel, in all four editions, it's there, although if you really have to consult, it's best to consult my doctorate per se, because I've told you many times, they're the voluminous footnotes. Every word I said, I had to document. When you publish it, you don't want, JPS published the book. They didn't want to publish the book and not sell it. So in order to sell it, the footnotes have to be less. It has to be a text that carries without thousands of footnotes. But JTS used to send students into Orthodox synagogues where people were rebelling and the women were rebelling and the feminists were yelling. And they would say, there is absolutely nothing wrong with not having a mechitza. And the proof is, it is not mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. Now, this is an interesting phenomenon that I'm quoting. But you see, here we come to the heart of what it means to be a Torah Jew. And it involves the present dialogue or debate or controversy, call it what you wish, as well. This is the secret of Torah Shabbat Peh. This is the secret of Mesorah. Again, I wish I could tell you to take off 7 years and just listen to the Shiurim that are on YU Torah. I don't know others, but at least the Shiurim I gave. I spoke about this in such depth years ago, and people with Baruch Hashem, these Shiurim did not go unnoticed. But you see, what is Torah Shabbat Peh? Why did the Ribbono Shel Olam insist upon Torah Shabbat Peh? The Gemara in Gittin, Daf Samach, the Ram Shebektav Yatar Hashem Lomram Bal Peh, the Ram Shabbat Peh Yatar Hashem Lekatvan. And until they wrote down the Mishnah, the Gemara, Eit Lasot Lashem, they had to make a Harad Shah that if we don't write it down, it will be lost. Why is this insistence upon Torah Shabbat Peh? And part of the answer is that Torah is a living experience. You cannot get it from a Murray-bound book. A book is lifeless. You need a living example. I'm sitting here because God privileged me to be able to get onto a bus, the 36 in the Bronx, take it for 20 minutes, get off at Amsterdam Avenue, walk five little blocks, and I sat right here. You saw the picture. I sat right here, and Moriu Rebbe sat over here. That's why I'm sitting here. It's not, there's no other reason. And whatever knowledge I have, and I admit when I graduated yeshiva, I was an ignoramus. It's true. What did we know? Yitzchak, come on, what did we know? A 200 daf gemara, a few simanim in Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya. But as the Rav said, I have that. Oh, I wish I could give you all the Torah I have in this, but let this suffice. And I don't think it's on Why You Torah. I think I gave this before they started taping me, and I regret it. What is a Rebbe Muvhak, the Rav said? Look into Hilchot Talmud Torah. It's not just the Rebbe taught you. He gave you a derech. That derech you then took later and expanded your knowledge 100 million times over. But the derech is from the Rebbe. And this is Masorah. And this is the way we live as Jews. There was never a shul without a machitza. From time immemorial, men and women worshipped separately. You don't have to go any further than open up your siddur where you davened this morning, Oz Yashir Moshe B'nei Yisrael, and then afterwards in Parshat B'Shalach, Vateitse Miriam. Then Miriam and the women sing separately. And you don't have to be a great genius to understand this. Sexual tension is a reality of life. Thank God we have it. If we didn't have it, no one would be sitting here. I spoke about that. That's an open Medrash Rabbah. An open Medrash Rabbah. He told me Od. What's told me Od? Tov is the Yetzer Tov, and Ma'od is the sexual, what we call Yetzer Hara. If we didn't have it, who wants to marry? You marry a strange woman, she takes all your money, you have kids. Who needs kids? They drain you, you can't sleep at night, then they don't listen to you, and then the teacher sends for you. Oh, come on, what does it mean? What does it mean? Ah, because there's a sexual urge. Thank God you married, and what a wife, and what a partnership, and what children, and grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. And my mother was privileged to see Dor Hamishi, a fifth generation. Not all of us achieved that. I'm on the fourth now. I pray to the Ribbono Shel Olam. I want to hold the fifth in my hands like I hold the fourth. But that's life. But prayer, the time of prayer, your mind is sacred. Your mind is holy. You're not looking at women. You're not being attracted. You're davening. Your mind is on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is why. It is Mesorah. It is Torah Shabbal Peh. It is life. The Beit HaMikdash. You see what they did? Down, up, till they found a solution. Every shul is a mikdash ma'at. If a shul is a mikdash ma'at, then it's axiomatic. Men and women have to be separate. And this too is very important in paskening a shaila about mechitza. My dear students, will fill in, will dot the I's and cross the T's next week, Be'ezrat Hashem.
Sorry.
Yes, David.
Michael, so I just
want... One second. Jay.
So
your son is David.
David.
All right.
So you mentioned the Jew Center, they had a small pizza, but I just wanted you to know that Rabbi Young picked his fights.
Right.
And so people couldn't pick every fight that there was. We had a relatively small pizza.
Right.
But Rabbi Young, who was my rabbi, never ceased lecturing about Taurus and Mishpacha.
Right.
That was regarded as the most
basic.
As the most basic, and that's what he spoke about incessantly.
Now we spoke about Rabbi Young in the class in our Monday class in great detail, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I had the privilege of studying with him, and I quote him in my seventh book, the sentence that saved my life. Judaism is perfect, Jews are not. And with the greatest respect. Okay, to reiterate, we're going to daven Marav in a second, but I have to give out some material. It's Baruch Hashem, classroom decorum. Tomorrow I wouldn't miss the class for anything, and I'm going to reconvene the question of Eretz Yisrael as a political, geographic entity or a spiritual concept. We'll come back to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and we'll come back to some current events that, as well, and a question I just received. And I leave you free to reach your own conclusion. I'll tell you what my own feeling is. It also involves the Mossad and arguments that we would, within sitting in secluded rooms surrounded by three levels of security, arguments that would be on the desk and we would go back and forth on. And I hope to finish out Shluchim tomorrow and go one step further, time allowing. Today, what did we do? We finished out women singing. We finished out Tinokot and turning back the clock. We weaved Rabbi Mordechai Willick into the discussion as well. And I think I understand Rabbi Willick correctly. I try to explain it Friday night to the person on my side, but it's pretty hard to get him to open up a little. I see he's a shtaker when he has an opinion. Boy, oh boy, it carries. Then we went into the start of what's very, very fascinating. I haven't even touched the Shaila yet, but it's to Rav Menashe Klein's credit that he takes on a question like this coming from the religious Zionist world. Now, I want to give Michael and Yitzchak, this is for you. It's all that remains of your...
We have it already.
You have it? You have it. You have it. So if anyone wants it, it's artwork. You'll see why. It's a memory of someone.
Did you know he was an artist?
Sure, of course.
Yeah, I had no idea.
He was my neighbor. Of course I know.
He lived there for 8 years and had no idea.
Okay, yeah, of course I knew. What happened to his apartment?
It's still owned by the Friedman family.
And they're renting it out?
Renting it out.
Very nice. Does anyone want this? This Kovetz, but this is from all the Colin Stolenish Yeshiva, Divrei Torah. Very interesting material here on opening up a Pepsi Cola bottle on Shabbos, opening up a can of tuna. A very fascinating material. Yitzchak, this is for you. Pass it back. Pass that back to Yitzchak. Okay, we'll talk about tomorrow. Finally, did everyone see this weekend Matzav HaRuach? There's an article here on Yeshiva Tagoshin that was set up in Egypt after the Six-Day War with the group that crossed over the Suez Canal. And for months, everything remained stationary while negotiations went on with Kissinger. And it brought back memories to me because students from BMT, the Kollel didn't exist yet, went down to Africa. It was in Africa, actually. Egypt, Africa, beyond the Suez Canal, to entertain the troops. And here, this is Yoshua ben Meir, who was a Rosh Yeshiva, there, an army personnel. He was one of the Rosh Yeshiva of the yeshiva they set up. Chayalim had endless time on their hands, so there was serious learning going on. Yoshua ben Meir is an American. It's Judah ben Meir's younger brother. He is of American origins. His father was a Chaver Knesset. His brother was a Chaver Knesset. But he remained the Rosh Yeshiva. Okay, does anyone have a chiyuv and to meet again in health and happiness? Das v'danya. Michael, v'hurachamim. Okay?